And welcome to part two of our conversation about Tonin Liyoresh, Tonin Lelokeach. I may end up needing to record a supplement afterwards if we don't finish everything within the hour, which is possible because there's an awful lot to talk about. So we'll see how it goes. We started out last time by saying that normally we assume judges are neutral parties in cases, and we take great pains to ensure that neutrality. We don't want the judges to appear that they are arguing for either side in the case. However, our Gemara, Bava Basra, Chaf Gimel Amud Aleph, told us that where a lokeach, a buyer, or a yoresh, an heir, fails to make a claim related to rights that they may have received from the person who bequeathed the estate or from the person who sold them the property, Beis Din might make that claim on their behalf. And so our questions were, why do we allow Beis Din to make a claim on behalf of litigants? Why isn't that a violation of judicial neutrality? Is it specifically about Yoresh and Lokeach? Or would do this for other people as well? And are there limits to what the Beis Din is able to claim on behalf of the Lokeach, on behalf of the Yoresh? So we saw the Gemara on Daf Chav Gimel. We're not going to go through that again now, in which we said that the purchaser has the right to make a shovach, a dovecut, near somebody else's property. And the argument was that his predecessor on the property had acquired the rights. That's the argument that we're going to make on his behalf, that his predecessor already had the rights to do so. We also saw the Gemara Bava Basra Ayin Amud Beis, where we are towing on behalf of a yoresh, on behalf of an heir, that his father had repaid a debt that the father had. So we're willing to make that claim on his behalf. A little more complicated than that. It was the case of Ishtar Iska, not going into it right now. We saw also Bava Basra Malaf Amud Beis, which said we're towing for the lokeach as well. It was talking about the fellow who lived in the upper floor of the house for 4 years, and then suddenly the fellow on the lower floor notices him and says, hey, what are you doing in my house? And there also, we said that we can make a claim on behalf of the person in the upper floor saying that he bought his rights there from a third party. We did note, very important for the discussion today, that the claim has to live in the real world. It has to be something that corresponds to reality, so we want to make sure that that third party from whom he bought the rights actually lived there for one day. And then we also noted the Gemara in Gittin and Chesamid Beis that talks about buying from a Sikrico, and I'm not going to go through that right now. So we moved, after we saw these examples, and really I noted there are many more examples you could bring of Tanina Lokeach Liyoresh, we moved into the question of why Taninan is okay. Why is it okay for me to make this claim as a judge? So first of all, we said it's not just for a yaso, for a yoresh. It's not just for a lokeach. It's not only about heirs. It's not only about buyers. The Rashba noted it applies to a mekabel matana. You receive a gift. So also, you're entitled to have, well, the judge is entitled to make a claim on your behalf about rights that originally were from, excuse me, the person who gave the gift. So we had the example of the fellow who got the seat in shul and the rights from his predecessor in that seat in shul. We also had the case of the creditor who received property from a debtor. And once again, the argument that he had received the rights to certain things from the debtor who had it before him. I just need a bottle of water. Swallowed something. It's right there next to the standing desk. Thank you so much. So why is it that you're able to step in and be towing on behalf of the lokeach, on behalf of the yoresh, on behalf of the mekabel matana, on behalf of the baal hov? Why does it work? Thank you. In all of these cases. So our first approach was the Sefer HaChinuch. He says, "Kol alma navi yasam lo se'anun." Our first approach was to say that the judges have a responsibility to weigh in on behalf of widows and orphans. That was extremely problematic as a suggestion. First of all, we have a principle, Ein Merachem Ein Bedin. You're not supposed to employ mercy when it comes to judging a case. You can do nice things for people outside of the Din Torah. But a Din Torah is a Din Torah. Second, as the Menchas Chinuch notes, it doesn't fit. We are towing, we'll make the claim for an adult who is a yoresh, not just for a minor. We're towing for lakuchos, for buyers. They're not Amanos and Yisomen. What is he talking about? So we said maybe that means there's an added chiyuv for them. Or maybe there's an added obligation in cases where Ta'aninan doesn't apply. Nonetheless, you should help them. But you can't say that Ta'aninan as a principle is about helping the Amana and the Yasam. That just doesn't make any sense. So the second approach is the general approach, which is Psach Picha Le'ilem. And that's what we did in a little bit of a rush at the end last time. I wanted to explain it a little bit better this time. The principle of Psach Picha Le'ilem, which is again Batsheva's counsel to Shlomo in Perek Lamed Aleph in Mishle, right before the classic Eishes Chayil poem. She says you should open up your mouth on behalf of the mute. That's a king's job. And we saw that Rashi and Ksuvos, I think I brought it again in the sheet here, it's in source base, but we saw it already last time, says that that's the basis for making these claims on behalf of the I skipped an important part of my review. So let me just go back to the review for a second. I skipped one step, which was the question of why we are able to step in and be Tohen. Not why we should be Tohen, but why are we able to step in and be Tohen? So the first approach was Tosos and the Rush, which was that the person I am helping out had no way to know the financial affairs of the predecessor. They had no way to be up on that. They inherited something, they bought something, they didn't know anything about what was being done before they came into possession of the property. That was one approach. The other approach brought by the Shach is the person in front of us right now in Beis Din is not really the Baal Devarim. He's not really the litigant. Meaning, I take over a property, I have a dovecot there, you now complain as my neighbor, what's this dovecot doing? It's too close to my property. It's not really between you and me. It's between you and the guy before me, who isn't here. Who knows where he is? He may not be alive anymore in the case of a Yoresh. So Beis Din is not really making an argument on behalf of the litigant in front of them. Beis Din is making an argument on behalf of somebody who's not even here. That was the idea that the Shach presented in Choshen Mishpadai in Beis. So that brought us to the question of, so why do we step in on behalf of these people? And our first answer, Amana V'yasam, our second answer, again, is Psach Picha Le'ilem. So the idea of Psach Picha Le'ilem is the basis for being Tohen in cases beyond the ones where either the person lacks the information or where the person isn't the true Baal Davar. Meaning, we have cases of being Tohen for people even outside of the framework of what we're talking about. I gave an example of it from the Shulchan Aruch in Source Gimel. The Haresh Shtaro Elev Zuz. You have somebody who has a bill of debt for 1,000 zuz. Okay, V'ta'an halove parakulo. The borrower says, I paid the whole thing off already. I just lost my place. V'amalva omer lo nifrati ele miktsaso. And the creditor says, no, I only collected on part of it. Lo yifra es hasha'ar, ela b'shvua ke'ein shel Torah. The borrower does not pay unless the lender is going to take a shvua, is going to swear. And the way this works is that the Beis Din demands the shvua on behalf of the love. The Beis Din demands it on behalf of the borrower. That idea that the Beis Din is going to demand it on his behalf, this is nothing to do with our case. With a case of Lokeach and Yoresh, right? This is not about somebody who's lacking knowledge. This isn't about somebody who's not the Baal Din. And yet, Beis Din is able to make the claim on his behalf. And in truth, Psach Picha Le'ilem becomes the basis for a lot more than the Ta'aninan case that we have here. Gittin Lamed Zayin Amud Beis, the classic in Source Dalid, in which a creditor comes before Rav after Shemitah and says, what am I supposed to do? He's saying he won't pay me back. And Rav says, well, maybe you had a prosbul and you lost it. And we say, yeah, Psach Picha Le'ilem, you're able to make that claim on behalf of the borrower. That has nothing to do with Ta'aninan L'Yoresh Elokeach, but we invoke Psach Picha Le'ilem. One more case, the Yerushalmi in Sanhedrin, Source Hay. Rav Huna kad havayada zichu lebar nosh bedina v'lo havayadale. When Rav Huna knew a reason to argue on behalf of a litigant, but the litigant wasn't aware of it, they have a pasach lei, so he would start on his behalf, because Psach Picha Le'ilem, open up your mouth for the mute. This is way beyond intervening in cases where he's not the Baal Davar, or intervening in cases where he doesn't have information about his rights. It's way, way beyond. And the Rambam brings it as halacha. If you take a look at Source Yud, At source Vav, I should say, I'm sorry, I brought you from the Rambam and Hilchos Sanhedrin, Perek Chaf Aleph, I brought you two halachos, which seem to contradict each other. At the end, we will have resolved the apparent contradiction. But take a look. His first halacha. Minayin l'dayin shlo yasa melitz l'dvarav shabal din. How do you know that the dayin should not become an agent of a litigant in the case? Shenema midvar sheker tirchak, stay away from lying. The judge should say whatever appears to be right in this case, and that's it. He should keep his mouth closed other than that. He shouldn't teach one of the litigants anything. Even if you have a case in which one litigant actually brings one witness, and the other litigant isn't protesting, hey, that's just one witness. He says, Lo yomar lo ein mekablan eid echad. The judge should not say, what I would have thought is just point of order in the courtroom, right? The judge should not say, we don't accept one witness. Ela yomar linitan harei zeh eid alacha. Rather, he should say, this person has already testified against you. That's it. That's what he should say. And the halavai sheyodev yomar emes hayid. And we hope that the other litigant is going to acknowledge that the one witness's testimony is actually valid. Ad sheyiton hu v'yomar eid echad hu v'eino neman alai. He has the right to say, I don't accept this. There's only one witness, but that's up to him. You follow? You see how he's limiting what the judge can do. The judge can't say what this guy just brought is invalid. That really limits what a judge can do. However, you keep on reading. He then says, the judge sees an argument on behalf of one of the litigants, and the Baal Din is trying to make the claim, but he doesn't know how to put it together, how to frame it. Or the guy is in pain. He wants to say something true, but he is so angry. The claim leaves him, or nishtabish b'nei asichlus, or he gets confused because he's not sharp. You're allowed to help a little bit in order that the guy should be able to begin speaking, because we want to make sure that that this fellow is going to have the opportunity to have his case heard. And then the Rambam says, you know, you have to be really careful with this, because you have to avoid violating that principle from Pirkei Avos. My point being, first of all, this Rambam seems to contradict himself, because on the one hand, he's not allowed to say anything about the one witness, and on the other hand, he's allowed to make the claim, you know, to push the guy along to make a proper claim. This is very strange. But number two, it's very clear that Psach Picha Le'ilin goes way beyond Ta'aninan, and the Aruch HaShulchan has this as well in Sur Zayin, but in the interest of time, I'm going to skip that. So I want to come back to some of the problem of where Ta'aninan goes based on Psach Picha Le'ilim and what Psach Picha Le'ilim allows us to do beyond Ta'aninan. But really, our first responsibility is our Gemara. And our first responsibility is to answer one of the questions that we asked at the beginning last time, which is, how does the actual Taina work? The claim you are making on behalf of the Lokeach, on behalf of the Yoresh, how does that work? And this affects really practical questions, such as, what if the Yoresh wants to make an argument, but he can't. He can't personally make an argument, such as where there is a migo that he personally could not claim. Right? In other words, the claim of the Yoresh would be, believe me when I say X, because I could have said Y. However, he actually would not have been believed to say Y. I'll give you a practical example, because I really should spell it out a little bit further. Let's take the following case. We've said, and it's going to come up again today, that in the event that somebody borrows money, and then, I'm sorry, not money, someone borrows an object, and then he dies, the heir is able to claim the object was returned. The heir is not able to claim the object was stolen by bandits. He's not credible to claim the object was stolen by bandits. We'll come back to why he can't, but he can't make that claim. He can't claim nensa, that the item was simply stolen by bandits. The problem that we have is that the reason why we believe you to say the item was returned is amigo. We'll let you say that because you could have said the item was stolen. But he couldn't have said the item was stolen. His father could have said the item was stolen. He couldn't have said it. So are we willing to be towing on behalf of a lokeach a claim that's based on a migo where he couldn't have made the migo backup claim? You follow? That's one question that comes up. Another question that comes up. What if the heir makes a claim that actually contradicts the argument we want to make on behalf of the heir? Right? We want to be able to say on behalf of the heir, you never owned this property. However, the heir already said, my father bought it off of your father. So are we willing to make a claim of lo hayu dvar me'olam? Your father never owned it. You never owned it. It's been in my family. Mimos Yehoshua ben Nun. Right? Are we willing to say that on behalf of the heir when the heir has already acknowledged that it was in the other guy's family? So these are some of the questions that are affected by how we understand the way Taina works. Are we clear about where we're going? Okay? Good. Thanks. So we're going to give three ways to look at how the Taina works. Our first two approaches emerge from a comment in the Kovetz Shiurim. The Kovetz Shiurim, Volume 2, Simon Gimel, when he has his individual Simanim, not the ones that are on a Masechta, Siv Gimel and Siv Dalet. It emerges from a discussion in Kiddushin. Take a look at source Ches on your sheet, please. Mishnah in Kiddushin says the following. A man says, Kiddashti es biti. A man says he accepted Kiddushin on behalf of his daughter. Or he says, Kiddashti v'gerashti akshikitana. When she was a minor, I accepted Kiddushin for her, and I accepted the get on her behalf as well. Vari kitana, and she's still a minor. Naaman, he's credible to do so. He was the one who said that there was a Kiddushin. He's the one who says that there was a gerushin. Nishbeis ufdisia, if he claims that she was taken captive and he redeemed her, bein shiktana, bein shigdola, eno neman, he's not believed. Whether she's a minor, whether she's an adult doesn't make a difference, he is not believed. So the Gemara asks, why do you believe him regarding the Kiddushin, and you don't believe him regarding the being held captive? Why one and not the other? Maishna Reisha, Maishna Seifa. So Amar Ravashi. Ravashi says, Reisha Rachmana Hemne. Ravashi says, in the Reisha, God believed him. What do you mean? Like Rav Huna said, quoting Rav, Dam Rav Huna Marav, Minayin La'av Shenemon Lazarus Bito Min HaTorah. How do you know, biblically, that a father is able to make the claim that his daughter is now ushered to the world because he accepted Kiddushin for her? How do you know that the father is believed? Shenemar SBT Nasati La'ish Hazeh. The Torah, in presenting the laws of Motzi Shemra and so on, says, the father says, I gave my daughter to so-and-so. And we believe him. So he says, I gave her La'ish to a man that prohibits her to the rest of the world. You're claiming that you accepted Kiddushin. But La'ish Hazeh, to this man, Hitira, that now permits her to a whole bunch of people who are not relatives of the original guy. So Binisu and Hemnei Rachmana La'av, there's a special Gzeras HaKasuv. There's a pasuk that says, we believe the father regarding Kiddushin of the daughter. By the way, I'm not going into it all here, the discussion of the advisability of fathers accepting Kiddushin for their daughters, and Kiddushin for minor daughters, the Gemara in Kiddushin already told us is usur, so please don't do it. Daughters should not be getting married when they're young, that young anyway. But in any case, the Torah believes the father. As far as Nisuin, Bishvuya Lohemne, the Torah does not believe him regarding the Shavuya case. So along comes the Ran, commenting on the Rif. And he says, but why don't we do a Migo? Why don't we make a Migo argument? I'm assuming that those who are participating know the basics of Migo. I apologize for not taking more time on just background of Migo, but the basics of a Migo, what I will say right now, we're going to explore more of it anyway along the way, is the Migo means since, as a result of, meaning, since I could have said X, and you would have believed me, and that's a bigger claim, you should believe me when I say Y, which is a lesser claim. That's the guts of Migo as far as we are concerned. So the Ran says, V'im Tomar, you might ask, Nehemne Bishvuya, believe him when he says his daughter was held captive, Migo de'iboy Omar ki dashtia v'gerashtia, because he could have said, I accepted Kiddushin for her, and I accepted the get for her, de mehemen, which is believed, we said so in the Mishnah, upasal amikuna, and the result is the same. she's disqualified from Kohanim. Meaning, what would have been the halachic implication of her being held for ransom? That now she's no longer able to marry a Kohen. What's the halachic implication of her being divorced? That she's no longer able to marry a Kohen. So why isn't this amigo? Believe me to say that she was taken captive and ransomed because I could have just said that I accepted Kiddushin and Gerushin for her. Why not believe me on the other point? So the Ran gives two answers. First answer. Yesh lomar demigo lachatzi taina lo amrinan. His first answer is because this is really only a halfway. Because there are two results of saying that she was taken captive, and only one of them is going to be relevant regarding get. The results of her being taken captive are, yes, she can't marry a Kohen, but it also can disqualify her from eating Truma if she's a Bas Kohen. There's a whole discussion that I skipped here in this thing about Bas Kohen, Bas Yisrael, but there are two results there. Whereas claiming that she received a get will only disqualify her from marrying a Kohen. It wouldn't disqualify her from being able to eat Truma. So therefore, it's not really true that this is a greater claim and this is a lesser claim. It's not so. They're actually different claims. Daniel, can you, are you on the Zoom or you're not?
No.
No, you're not. Okay, just speak loud, please.
Sure. I just didn't understand this amigo so well. So wouldn't we now say that this amigo does apply to the father's Yisrael?
So that's part of what I skipped in the run here. Yeah, that's probably, essentially the answer would appear to be yes, just based on this first answer. But then he says, the Gemara doesn't distinguish and say, we'll believe him for Yisrael, we won't bring him for a Kohen, you know. So, but yes, your argument is there in the part that I ellipsized in the Ran. Correct. Correct. So that's the first answer in the Ran, off on a technicality. Second answer in the Ran. V'acherim Amru and others said, no. The fact that we believe the father is a novelty. You needed a pasuk. The fact that we believe the father regarding marriage and divorce of his kid. He should be no more credible than random witness. Dayenu shenamin osa. I feel like I should sing. Dayenu shenamin osa ba'osa taina atzma. It is sufficient that we believe him regarding that one claim of marriage. Aval ein omer migo machmas de ein lanu boal chidusho bilvad. We're not willing to extend this chidush of we believe him regarding marriage and divorce to also now believe him for other things on the basis of a migo. That's really interesting because it's not logical at all. Right? I mean, so what? Yes, it's a chiddush, but at the end of the day, he's believed to say this, and therefore he could have said it. And therefore, if you say the reason why Migo works is because, believe me when I said this, because I could have said that, it's still true. So, Rav Elchanan Wasserman in the Kovetz Shiurim, which I brought you in Source Yud, offers you two different understandings of how Migo works. The first approach that he brings is the classic understanding of Migo. The classic understanding, you, me, everybody else, when we first saw Migo appear in a Gemara, we understood it instinctively and intuitively, right? We said, believe him to say this, because people who lie will say that, right? If he were lying, he wouldn't have said this. He could have had a much easier time if he had just said that, right? That's the basic principle. So, example, I own a field. Or everybody thinks I own a field at any rate. And one day, this is a mission in Ksubos. One day, I come to somebody and say, you know, this field, it used to belong to your dad, but I bought it off of him. Now the guy says, wait a minute, it belonged to my dad. Prove that you bought it off of him. To which I say, nobody knew anything about it belonging to your father. I just said it. If I wanted to lie, I would have told everybody this has been in my family for generations and generations. So it's just logical. If I were lying, I would have done a better job. People who say this are telling the truth, right? That's the simple way to explain Migo. That's a straightforward approach. And the simple, straightforward, that's the first idea. As the Kovetz Shiurim writes, if you're looking at Source Yud, the first part I bolded, Dehu anan sahadi sha'omer emes. We testify that what this guy's saying is true. Because everybody knows that is true. D'mal l'shaker. Why would he lie? If he was going to lie, he could have made a better claim. And he says, that's what the Ran is saying in his first approach. Right? The Ran's first approach, that this isn't really a good Migo because there are ways in which he's better off or he's more effective by claiming she was taken captive than by claiming the get. If he wanted to do something bad to his daughter, which is the assumption here in this case, that he'd be lying in order to do something bad, he could have been worse by making that claim. So therefore, there's no Migo. That's your first approach. However, Rabbi Chanan says there's another way to look at the Migo. And the second approach understands that Migo is not really about that. Rather, it's about what we call koach hataina, the power of the claim. Meaning what we're saying is, if that claim would have been credible, transport that credibility to this claim. Take a look at Beis within source Yud. Yeshlomer de'enu mitam anan sahadi. It's not about this, we are witnesses, that he's probably telling the truth. Elashu din ne'amanus. It's about credibility. De'bekoach ne'amanus sheyesh lo liton tana acheres. Ne'aman gam al tana zo shu to'ein. Because he's credible to say that, he is also automatically credible to claim this. It is a portable claim. It is a portable credibility, I should say. That's what the Kovetz Shiurim says. And here, he's not really credible to say that he married off his daughter. It's not that we trust him to say he married off his daughter. It's just the Pasuk says he's able to make that statement. If so, he's only able to make that statement. That's not a portable credibility. It is specific to that chiddush and not to to anything else. You follow the two approaches to the way Migo works? Either Migo is, you believe me because you know I'm telling the truth, or Migo is, I would have been believed to say X, borrow that when I say Y. So those two approaches can be applied to what's happening in our case of Ta'aninan. Either I could say, we believe the Yoresh, we believe the Lokeach, because the claim about what his father did, or what the person who sold him the property did, could be true. It really could be true. It's, you know, within bounds, it's reasonable to think the debt was repaid. The property was purchased. The guy lived there for a day, right? It's reasonable to think that this might be true. And I would say this sounds like, going back to what we said last week and I reviewed in the beginning, this sounds like Tosfos and the Rush. That really what we're saying is, the reason we can be telling is because he doesn't know his father's business. This really could have happened, right? It's all of a piece. He doesn't know. He makes a claim. It's a realistic claim. So believe him. That's one approach. The other approach, though, is to say, we believe the Yoresh, we believe the Lokeach, because the original owner of the property, the seller, the father, whoever it was, could have made this claim themselves and been believed. And we transfer their authority to the Yoresh. We transfer their authority to the Lokeach. And that sounds more like the Shach, who says the reason we could be towing is because you're not the Baal Devarim. It's not really about the guy who's sitting in front of us. It's about the person who isn't here anymore. It's about their credibility. It's not about this guy's credibility at all. So that's a neat way to envision the way Ta'aninan works. And then we have a third approach. And the third approach is also based on a Kovetz Shiurim, in that he has a siman on Migo, Gimel, and then in the middle of the siman he says, Od Be'inyan Migo. So this is in the Od Be'inyan Migo, and he restarts his numbers. And he's Siv Zayin. It's based on a sugya in Ksuvos. If you take a look at source Yud Aleph, Mishnah says, "Hapogemes ksubasa lo tifra ela bishvua." In the event that a woman wants to collect on her ksuba, but she has already collected part of the ksuba, so she's going to need to swear that this amount is still outstanding. Eidachad miida shiprua lo tifra ela bishvua. In the event that one witness says it was already paid off, also she's going to need to swear. Minichsa yisoma minuchasim mishubadim mishalav afanav lo tifra ela bishvua. She also has to swear if she's going to collect off of the property of the yisomim. And that's really our focus right here. Why is it that we need a shvua? Why does she have to swear? Rashi in source Yud Beis says, Bishvil lekuchos anan ta'aninan dot dot dot. We're not about the lekuchos here, we're about the yisomim. Vahashta anan ta'aninan, well actually it's about both. So alright, let's start from the beginning of the Rashi. Bishvil lekuchos anan ta'aninan dilma ihava gavis min halove havatayin lach ishtabali delo pratichu bois ishtabui. we will claim on behalf of lekuchos, people who bought property that is really subject to the ksuba claim. So we will claim on their behalf that maybe if you would have, let me say it a little more clearly. She wants to collect property for the ksuba. That is property that belonged to heirs who borrowed money and set up a lien on the property. Along came the creditor when they defaulted and he took the property. That's what we're talking about. So you're going to come to them and say, I want this for the ksuba. They're going to say, if you had gone to the borrower originally and demanded it, they would have said, swear that you haven't collected the ksuba yet. And you would have had to swear. So too, swear to us. Hashta anan ta'aninan, we make the claim, d'psach picha le'ilem, who has part of psach picha le'ilem, uminisa yesomim, as well, we do this off of the property of the yesomim, we're gonna make the same claim, as well as nifrashtal b'fanav, if she wants to collect without the husband being present in the case of a divorce. So, bottom line is, Rashi says we are towing, we will make the claim on behalf of Yorshim, on behalf of Lekuchos, to demand a Shavua, just like the father could if he were there. That's the way Rashi understands why we are able to do this. Clear? Rashi says the reason we demand a Shavua, the reason we demand for her to swear, is because the heirs, or whoever it is who's now holding this property, will say, if you were claiming from our predecessor, you would have to swear. So too, if you want to claim it from us, you're going to have to swear. That's what the judge is saying on their behalf with Ta'aninon. However, Tosfos in Shavuos says no. Tosfos in Shavuos in Sorys Yud Gimel quotes the idea that Rashi quoted, and then he says in the middle of Tosfos where I bolded, Nira de time alav mishum hachihu. That's not the reason at all. We would make the claim on behalf of the Yesomim, on behalf of these kids, even if their father could not have made the claim. Where would the father be unable to make the claim? It talks about the following case. A man and a woman get married. The woman says to the man, I'm worried. I don't want to have to take a shavua one day. God forbid I need to end up claiming the ksuba money. I don't want to be in a position where I'm going to need to take a shavua. I don't want that. And he says, fine. I accept, I'm stipulating right now, that you will not have to make a shavua. You're nucky. You're clean. You don't need to make a shavua. I accept whatever you say. From now, I already accept it. So what's the rule? If she wants to claim it from him, they get divorced, she wants to claim it from him, she will not need to take a shavua. However, he dies, and now it's the heirs. Tosfos notes, lo tipra mena yisomim ela b'shavua. She's still going to need to take an oath in order to be able to claim off of the yisomim. Even though the father couldn't have done it. Alma, we see, Tosfos says, avud rabbanan takanta liyasmi afilu b'makam shena av yachol lahashpia. That shows you that the rabbanan will say, swear for the Yesomim, even where the father couldn't have demanded the Shavua at all. You're still going to do it. So Rashi had said that you're just saying apply the father's rights to the kids. Tosfos says, no, the kids have stronger rights than the father. How does that work? Why should that be so? So the Kovetz Shiurim steps in with an explanation, which I brought you in Source Yadalid. He says, I'll tell you why. Tosfos believes that the rights of the Yoresh, of the original owner, the rights of the father, the rights of the seller, whatever it is, are inherited by the kids. If you look at Source Yadala, the Sfirla, the Tosfos, the Koach, Yisomim, Betahanasan, who betold Ami Koach Av. The power that the Yisomim have is a product of the father's power. That's the way the Tosfos looks at it. V'dugma l'davar ke'en Yerusha, it's like an inheritance. V'kevin shav machal al-zchus tahanaso, ein lam mali resh. And therefore, really, the father was mocha, the kids should not be able to get it. And therefore, this is not a case of ta'aninon. That's what Tosfos says. However, Rashi doesn't agree. Ubadas Rashi nira de koach ha-yesomim eino betolda mi koach ha-av, ali she-yesomim yeshen koach ta'ina mitzad atzman kemo ha-av. Rashi says no. He says the heirs have their own koach ha-taina, their own ability to make the claim on their own like the father had. And the father had such a right before he forgave it. So the Yesomim are in place of the original father standing. So what the Kovetz Shiurim says is that according to Tosfos, the rights of the Morish Mocher are inherited and applied by the Yoresh Lokeach, and you only inherit whatever he had. That's the way it works. Whereas Rashi believes the Yesomim are the real litigants. So it is suggested that what the Kovetz Shiurim is saying about Tosfos represents a third approach to explain Ta'aninan. The first approach of Ta'aninan was, the first approach based on the idea of Migo was to say, we believe you because it's logical. We are willing to make logical claims on your behalf. The second approach to, and it's logical, you didn't know about your father's affairs and therefore you can make this very logical claim. Our second approach was to say that the reason why you can make this claim is because the Morish Mocher could have made this claim themselves. That sounds like Rashi here. However, the third approach is to say that no, the Yesomim are not the litigant. The true litigant is actually the Morish, is actually the Mocher. The current litigant isn't really the Baldover. That's the other way that you can take it. Sort of like what we said in the Shach, but I'll show you a difference shortly. Applying these ideas in explaining how Ta'aninan works, claiming on behalf of the Yesomim, where they already made a different claim. Not where they made a claim that contradicts, but they made a different claim. So this is a sugya in Bava Basra Lamed Aleph Amid Aleph. Are people with me here? It's a bad sign when I'm not getting a lot of questions. Are we good so far? It's just very basic. It's like, well, what is he adding? We did this in Seder. If you take a look at source Tesvav, Ze Omer Shel Avosai, you have one litigant who says, this field belonged to my fathers, this house belonged to my fathers. And then in brackets, I added in, the Bach adds in, and I have been living there for 3 years. And the other one says, no, this was my father's. This one brings witnesses that it belonged to his father. This one brings witnesses that he actually lived there for the 3 years. So Omar Rabba, Malo Lashakir. So Rabba says, why would he lie? When he says that when he makes the claim in this case, that meaning the Machzik, the fellow who's been living there for the last 3 years, when he makes this claim, of course he should be believed. Why would he be lying? He could have just said, instead of saying it belonged to my fathers, he could have said, I know it belonged to your father, and you got it, and then I bought it off of you. He could have said that instead of saying that it was always in my family. That's the simple way to read Rabbah here. We're going to come back to another, but that's a simple way to read Rabbah. He says, why would he lie when he could have just said, I bought it off of you? And if you'll say, well, where's your document saying you bought it? The answer is, I had a chazaka already for 3 years. I didn't keep the document. I didn't have to. He could have said that, so therefore we believe him. Amale Abaye, Mali Lashakir, B'makom Edim Lo Amrinon. To which Abaye says, we're not willing to take the Migo against Edim, who testify that it belonged to the other guy's father, contradicting the claim that your father had it. We're not willing to take the Migo against the Edim. That doesn't work. So the case then continues. Hadar Amar Le In. Davasachi Vizimente Minach. He then said, you're right. I admit it. The Machzik said, it belonged to your father, and I bought it off of you, or the Bach says, off of your father's, Minayu. V'hai damilach davasi, the only reason I said it was from my father's was, disamach li Allah ki davasi, because I consider it mine as though it was from my father's. So the Gemara asks, are you able to do that? Can you restate your claim? You made one claim, right? It was in my family forever. Now you're saying, no, I didn't mean it was in my family forever. I mean it was in your family forever. And I bought it off of your family. you said it was in my family. I meant it's like it was in my family forever. So can you actually do that? And the Gemara says, sure. Ula amar tayim v'chozer v'tayim. Ula says, go for it. Ne'ardai amri eno tayim v'chozer v'tayim. Ne'ardai are not so happy with that idea. And the sugya continues there. So, question regarding this Gemara. Abaye said, we don't accept your statement of my father owned it, right? On the basis of, I could have said, I bought it from you, if there are witnesses that it belonged to the other guy's father, right? That's what we said. Why aren't we just going to be towing that A's father, right? I wrote A's father in my notes. I never introduced you to A. A is the machzik. Why is it that we can't be towing that the machzik, guy who's been living there for 3 years, right? That his father, who lived there for one day, bought it off of the Ma'arer's father. Make that claim on his behalf. Right? Why am I not able to say, Machzik's father bought it off of Ma'arer's father, right? The Ma'arer is B, the challenger. The Machzik is A, the guy who's been living there. Why can't I say A's father bought it off of B's father? Simple, straightforward. What B is saying is true. It was in his family for generations. It's absolutely true. Nonetheless, A's father bought it off of B's father. Why can't I make that claim in this case? So we have three different approaches in the Rishonim. The first approach is the Yad Ramah, who I found so difficult for some reason. I don't know where my head was. I was just having such difficulty that I actually translated it. So I figured, all right, let me include the translation on your sheet in source Tez Zayin. The statement of the Yad Ramah is this. We are willing to make a different claim. We are willing to make a different claim. However, we still need you to say the father lived there for one day. And that's not here in our case. Take a look at source Tezayin. We're just going to do my English translation in the interest of time. He says, this is where the machzik lacks proof that his father's lived there for one day. That's why we're not making the claim of his father bought it off the other guy's father. For as long as the machzik does not make a definite taina uncontradicted by witnesses, we won't make a taina on his behalf. He needs to make a definite taina of, I know my father was there for a day. His chazaka is like a chazaka without a taina. His taina, if it belonged to my father's, is not a taina since there are contradictory witnesses. But where the machzik has witnesses that his father's lived there for one day, then even though he doesn't say my father's bought it from your father's, we'll make the taina for him. We are willing to, even though it wasn't the claim that he made. Nonetheless, I'm good with that. As long as he can say, my father was there for a day, everything else we're willing to do. We're fine. That's the way the Yad Ramah reads this. And he goes on, as you can see there. This approach to Ta'aninan, that we're willing to make the claim, actually, you know what, I do need to go back into it, because he gives you a very important logical statement. He says, this is the meaning of our Mishnah, one who claims due to inheritance needs no taina. He only needs evidence that his predecessor lived there for one day. And since no taina is needed, this is the key, I almost skipped it. Therefore, when he claimed earlier, it belonged to my father's and not to your father's, and witnesses contradicted him, he didn't lose his rights with this. Why? Because it's not dependent on his taina, but on his chazaka and his father's residence. The taina he made is as though he never made it. Why? Because he just didn't know anything about his father's affairs. He had no idea. He was completely clueless. He didn't know what his father did or didn't do. So when he stands up and makes a claim in Beis Din and says, it's been in my family forever, Beis Din smiles and nods and says, that's nice. Listen, all you need to do is prove that your father was there for a day and then we'll take care of everything for you. You just sit quietly and you'll end up with a field. But you don't know anything about how your father got this field, so you just let us take care of the dirty work, okay? That's what Beis Din says to the litigant as far as the Yad Ramah is concerned. This could fit with the first approach in understanding Ta'aninan, right? That it's just a logical thing. He doesn't know anything, like Tosafot and the Rosh said. He doesn't know anything about his father's business, so work that, you know, to help him. It also could fit with approaches 2 and 3, that the credibility is with the father. This can fit with any of the approaches. Then you have a medium approach. And that's Tosafot was quoting the Ri. And that's in source Yud Zayin. The Ri says, we are not willing to make an argument on behalf of a lokeach, on behalf of a yoresh, if it actually contradicts their claim. The Yad Ramah is good. He says, I don't care what the guy said. It doesn't matter. He doesn't know anything. He's not the Baal Dabur. He doesn't know anything. It's not relevant. Tosafot quotes the Ri to say, the reason why we're not willing to say your father bought it off of the other guy's father is because you can't make an argument that contradicts the claim of the Yoresh or the Lokeach. Hang on one second, Daniel. Just reading the Ri, the last line in Sorsi at Zion, he's answering the question of why we don't say it was my father who bought it off of your father. The reason is because when he makes the claim it belongs to my father, it sounds like he means it always belonged to my father. It never belonged to your father. It's not that he bought it until he says so. And the reason why I can't make a claim on his behalf, your father bought it off of his father, is because it's directly contradicting the statement. That's Tosfos. That's the Ri. Right.
In the Yad Ramah's case, the Yorish has made a claim. It looks like he already knows what he's doing. So why are we now making a new claim?
Because the fact that people say things doesn't mean they know what they're saying. He made a claim. He put his best foot forward, but he had no idea. That's the way I would look at it. So the Yad Ramah says, don't listen to this guy. Just leave him be. He said what he said, Basin is going to say what they say, and it'll all be good. The Ri says you can't contradict him. You can't go that route. Yes, Michael. No, because he doesn't make that claim here. This is a claim that didn't appear in the Gemara. Correct. Right, because the Gemara is two different things. The Malach Shach Makom Edim is a response to Rabba, right? Rabba said, why would he lie? He could have just said, we bought it off of you. And Abaye's response is, you can't do that because there are Edim to undermine that. There are Edim that say that it belonged to B's father, contradicting the initial claim that this guy's father had it. But what we're asking now is, but why didn't we make a different argument on his behalf? Why didn't we say, instead of saying Mali Lashakir, instead of saying what Rabba said on his behalf, why don't we say, your father had it, and my father had it. My father bought it off of you. So the Yad Ramah said, yeah, we could, if you just had evidence that the father lived there at all. And the Ri is saying, no, you can't, because when he said my father had it, he meant my father always had it. And we're not willing to contradict that. And then you get the Rashba. And the Rashba says, not only are we unwilling to make a claim that contradicts his, we are not willing to make a claim that is different from his, so long as he made a claim that was Bari. He said, I know what I'm talking about. We are not willing to contradict it. As I state, that's the Rashba's position. If you just look at the part that I bolded in the Rashba, there is a whole back and forth here in the Rashba. I'm just worried about timing and getting in some of the other ideas. But the Rashba says, "Shein tonin lo leyorish v'lo lelokeach kol zman shu toin be'atzmo tanas bari, ela kol zman shu toin b'safek." He says, we're not willing to make a claim for him. If he says, I know what happened and this is what happened, we have no options. We're out of luck. There's nothing that we're now going to be able to do on that. And the Rashba says, therefore, you know what we do? When a Yoresh or a Lokeach comes to Beis Din, we ask them to make their claim first. If they have a Bari claim to make, then we're done. We don't want a situation in which we're towing on his behalf and it ends up contradicting the claim that he is making in Beis Din. That's no good. Or not even contradicting, but just the fact that he's making a claim at all in Beis Din already disqualifies us from doing this. We only are towing where he has no Bari claim. He has no definite claim. That's the position of the Rashba. That's his second answer for why we don't make the claim of this father bought it off the other guy's father. The Ramah in Source Yates Chosh Mishpat Reish Tzadi follows the Rashba. He says, when we say we are atoning for the Yoresh, Hani Mili Beshema, that only refers to cases of maybe, where he says a maybe. Avalam Utoin Bari, but if he makes a definite claim, Ain't Dunin El Al Pita Anosav, we only work with his Taina, and therefore he says, therefore, Ain't Tonin Lay, Anshashomin Tanosav Tchila. We wait to hear his claim before we do anything. That's what the Ramah says. In truth, I had a little bit of a hard time with this, because I thought that the Ramah in Kuf Mem Vav Chav Dalid was actually following the Yad Ramah. I wasn't 100% sure, and I didn't bring it here because I wasn't sure. But if you take a look at Kuf Mem Vav Chav Dalet in the Ramah, he seems to be following the Yad Ramah. So I'm not really clear on that. I don't know the difference. But that's in terms of making a claim on behalf of Yoresh, on behalf of Lokeach, where it's different from their claim. The other application I wanted to give is the one I mentioned before, claiming Ne'ensu, claiming that the item that their father had was actually stolen, right? The item that their father was given to guard was actually stolen. So, what happens in this case? One school of thought says, number one, we don't make that claim. That's clear. Sorry, I should have said that straight. We don't make the claim that it was Nanas, that the item was stolen. One reason offered for why we don't make the claim is stated by Tosfos. I brought it there in source. Chaf, he says, because it's exceedingly unlikely. We would have heard. He says, Im tomar akati amaygova kulo dinit on the yasmi nansu. Why don't I claim on behalf of the yorshim, the heirs, that it was stolen? Yeshlomer demelsev lo shchiachi. It's uncommon. Lo tani on the yasmi. We won't make that claim for the yasomim. Dinansu kala islay, because everyone would have heard if it was stolen. Granted, he says, their father could have made the claim that it was Nanas, but we're not willing to make the claim for them. That's the position of Tosfos. And that leads into the discussion about, well, they don't inherit his claim. Are they in his place? Are they not in his place? But I'm not going there right now. The Baal HaMa'or also has an explanation in Source Chaf Aleph that is similar to that, that the father would have told them that it was Ne'enas. And that, he says, is my favorite answer to the question of why we aren't towing Ne'ensu. The Baal HaMa'or goes through five different answers for why we don't say Ne'ensu. And this one, he says, is my favorite out of all the answers if this was a question in the first place. He doesn't believe it's a question in the first place. He says, we aren't towing every possible thing on behalf of litigants. That's the Baal HaMa'or's resolution for it. But he says, that would be a good answer. This is like the Anansahadi approach. This is like the approach to Ta'aninan that says, we only believe the claim for them if we think it could be true. Right? We don't think this could be true. However, a second school of thought is that the reason why you can't make the claim here is because the Yesomim contradicted the claim. Ramban, in his Chidushim on the Gemara, in Source Chav Beis, says, Hacha b'yesomim gedolim, habayin b'tanas atzman askinan. We're talking about adult yesomim. They made a claim for themselves in Beis Din. Klomer shetonin hechzirim avinu lach. They said, Dad repaid you. So now you can't come along and say, no, it was stolen from Dad. The Rashba doesn't like for you to contradict them, right? The Rashba isn't going to accept that. So he says, that's what's going on. It's because you can't make it because the yesomim already ruined the claim. The Baal HaMa'or hates that answer, and I brought you a piece of it in Source Chav Gimel. He says, the word Yesomim Stam in the Gemara always means Ketanim. He says, there's no such thing as Yesomim Stam in the Gemara meaning Gedolim. But the point for us isn't that. The point for us is this. This is saying we only make the claim for them if it can be consistent with what they themselves have said. That's the idea. We only make the claim if it could be consistent with what they had said. There's more to be said. I think I was not as clear as I should have been on the Nansu discussion, but I want to use the remaining 6 minutes to just note two other things because I think they're fascinating and I'll try to do it quickly. Number one, something that I learned in reading law cases as part of the legal ethics shiur is that there's this novel concept, novel to me, called arguing in the alternative. Or what's called alternative pleading. And I know Jeffrey's going to unmute and explain it, but actually I had to ask you to wait till 11:30. The concept is this. A lawyer makes multiple arguments about what happened in case there are objections that would disqualify some of them. It's an either-or set of arguments. So, cute example from Wikipedia in Source Chav Dalid. Skipping to the second paragraph there, at a late 1970s American Bar Association seminar in New York, Richard Racehorse Haynes gave this example. Say you sue me because you say my dog bit you. Well, this is my defense. My dog doesn't bite. Second, in the alternative, my dog was tied up that night. Third, I don't believe you really got bit. And fourth, I don't have a dog. So these arguments would seem to cancel each other out, but legally, you would be able to make that kind of multiple claims that you hope will contribute to being, to it all being true. Or accept, not true, but accepted. The relevance for our case is we said Bazdin is not able to contradict his claim about how he got the property with their own claim of how he got the property, right? Unless you take that one approach that they're not really the litigant at all. They're not really here. So does that mean that we won't accept arguing in the alternative? Right? Why can't it be? They made one claim, and Bazdin is going to make another claim, and between the two of them, somebody's going to win. So Rabbi Uri Dasberg, Olav Shalom, in Truman, makes the argument. I wrote here Dalid. It was volume Dalid, but I wrote in my notes it was volume 23. I'm tempted to say it's probably 23, and I just wrote it wrong in there, but I don't know. In any case, he has an article called Tanin Lebal Din where he raises this question. He deals with a case in which go into the case. Not necessary for us. He first brings the Gemara in Yevamos, Lamed Zayin Amud Beis, but I think it's obviously irrelevant. The case there is this. You have a kid who was born after the following set of circumstances. A man died without any children, apparently. His wife married his brother, right? They did Yibum, and it was close on the 3-month mark. And then, several months later, this kid is born, and it's a Safek. Is he from the first? Or is he from the second? So, the Beis Din at the time said that this was Yibum, and therefore the second, the brother, received all the property from the first one, and went on to have more children. Then this second brother dies. And now up comes the Safek kid, and he says, I want to share in the inheritance. His brothers or half-brothers prove that you have a right to the inheritance. Prove that you should be able to get. He says, Manoshah. He says, what do you want? Either I am from the first brother, in which case the whole Yibum was illegitimate, and all the property that your father got from my father, from the first one, is mine. Or I'm from the second one, in which case everything was legitimate. I am your full brother, and I should get a portion. But I should get it either way. So the rule is, depending on certain technical case aspects, which we're not going to go into, he wins. That argument can be a valid argument. But I don't think it's a basis for anything, because that's not really arguing either or. He's arguing both arguments. It's not an either or. He then brings an argument from the Rush. A case in the Rush, this is all on the sheets, but we're out of time, so I'm just going to say it outside. It's a better case. Reuven goes away. He borrows money from Shimon. He gives Shimon his house as collateral. He comes back to town and he finds there's stuff missing from his house. Shimon says to him, that stuff was never there, or it was there, but I never accepted responsibility for it. And if it's there at all, it's because my father built it. So the question now is, does that work? And the Rush rules against Shimon. He says, no, you can't do that. And as part of his response, he makes fun of this whole im argument. He says, you clearly don't have a handle on what you're doing here. You can read it on the sheet. So that shows that, no, you can't argue in the alternative in a Beis Din. So Rabbi Dasberg asks, why is that different from any Migo? When you say you could have claimed X, right? Now you want to claim Y. And he quotes your Rashba, who says that a litigant is allowed to change his claim in Beis Din, Migo, because he could have kept the claim. So long as the initial claim is not contradicted by witnesses, he can do that. But I don't think that's really an issue, that Rashba. Because in that case, you're not making an either-or argument. You're only arguing that your new claim is true. That's all you're doing. And that's true for all Migos. You're only claiming that one statement is true. So I think that Migo is fine. Arguing in the alternative, I want to make multiple claims at the same time and either accept this or accept that I think is more problematic. We still had, I wanted to deal with one other issue of going back to the question of when we are towing for a non-yoresh, non-lokeach. Maybe I'll record a 5-minute thing on it, and I'll send out a link to the chevra because it's already 11:30. Thank you very much. Next week, God willing, Rabbi Mann is going to give a Pesach shiur, I believe.